Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of good questions this morning. I'm gonna get to this muscadine question because we got it looking at it two ways. Greg's asked me a question. We got another one, but Bob has been. Bob, are you still there? Is Bob still with us? Bob, you there? We missed Bob. Bob, give us a call back. Let's. I'm sorry we missed Bob's lemon tree question. So let's get to these muscadines real quickly. How do you deal with an overgrown muscadine? And it's a tough one. The first issue that we got is if a muscadine is on an arbor, it's always going to be really hard to prune. First off, it's just going to be hard. If it's on a hog wire trellis or hog wire, you know, if you've got hog wire on the top of the arbor and it's growing on that, it's going to be impossible to prune. How do I know this? Let me tell you, I've tried it. It's just not a great way to grow. I mean, whatever you got, you just got to live with, because it is very hard. I mean, they're wrapped all around the hog wire. It's just very difficult. So I'm going to make a suggestion. One is, let's prune with the idea that we're going to get rid of the hog wire. And let's just use cable or something, not too many cables, maybe, I'm going to say put about, 5 or 6 cables in a 12-foot run. How's that? And then you'll be able to prune those in a sensible, reasonable way. It'll be much easier. 4 cables in a 12-foot run is probably more like it. So that's one way to think about it. And you'll sort of have the arbor effect, but you will actually be able to prune it. I don't know that you're going to be able to prune around all that hog wire in any effective way. If I were going to keep the hog wire, and I had to prune that and wanted to prune a little better, I guess the thing I would tell you is you probably need to reduce the number of sprouts coming from the base by about half or more. And you could do that. Particularly with something overgrown like that, and I would do it, because if you prune it really heavily, you're going to get a tremendous amount of regrowth. It's just going to be a mess again. Wait until after it's sprouted. I would do it later in spring, or maybe even in summer. I might be tempted to do it in summer, just to let it get some of its growth, because it's obviously a healthy vine. Let it get some of its growth done, so that after you prune it, it won't just put all that growth back on. Does that make sense? Let it get its growth spurt out, and then prune it. So timing can be pretty important there. You could do a little bit now, but if you're going to prune out a lot of that, wait until later and reduce those stems by half. If you're putting the cables up, you really want to reduce that to have basically one trunk that comes up pretty tall and have all of your sprouts coming off that single trunk. So you can see you're going to have to reduce not by half, but by 90% the number of sprouts coming from the base. So that's my advice. It's troublesome advice, because you're going to have to think about it just a little bit. If you want to call me and we can talk about it, we'll try to do that. we'll try to do that just a little bit better. Greg says, and Greg has great language here, because what we're going for Greg's asking about his muscadines and scuppernaws. Can I treat them just like I would have a Concord grape when I'm pruning them, leaving, this is Greg's words, Greg, can I quote you? Leaving three pimples on the candelabra. And I love the idea of leaving three pimples on the candelabra, because that's sort of what you're doing. Except that, Greg, I think that's good advice. And Greg's got this thing in his head. He's got the vision for how it works. The only thing I'd say, I beg to be quoted, he says. Here's the thing. Greg, Concord grapes are not as vigorous as muscadines. So you might want to only leave two pimples on the candelabra. By the candelabra, what you're getting is you're getting a vine, and it's got spurs, what we call spurs, which are main things, the little main little spurs, and they're not huge branches. They're just short little spurs that come off the main branch. And then you've got, on those spurs, you've got two buds. And for muscadines, I think two buds is probably sufficient in most cases. You can try for three, but two's probably enough. So, yeah, you got it. You got it. Greg, you might have to help us with this big muscadine, big muscadine mess that we're trying to figure out. How do we put all that together? Because when you got a big arbor like that, it's a lot of work to get it pruned, and you just can't do it with the hog wire. Sharon, oh boy, Sharon, you got a great question. I only hope I'm smart enough to answer it, and I can just about tell you I can't. But you go ahead. You there, Sharon? Did we lose Sharon?
We must pass.
Ah, that's too bad. Or maybe not. So Sharon, I'm just going to go with the question. Sharon says, how do I get rid of oxalis? And oxalis are those little shamrock-looking things. Some people say they kind of look like four-leaf clovers, but oxalis is, we have a lot of wild oxalis that grows in yards. And it's interesting, they've been growing in Mobile yards for a long time. They're not native here. They're from Brazil. They're from South America, maybe from other places. I saw some pictures, much to my surprise, I saw some pictures in cemeteries, in old Church Street Cemetery in Mobile, and there were oxalis growing there 120 years ago, back in 1890-something. Yep, so Sharon, are you there? You hearing me going on about oxalis?
Anyway, I go up under and I pull it, that little corm out.
Yeah.
And the leaves follow, but it comes right back.
Yeah. Sharon, it is a bane. I don't know. I mean, that's what I do. I try to get all the seedlings, but it's a really smart character, isn't it? It's got all those little bitty bulbils. They're not really seeds. They're bulbils. B-U-L-B-I-L-S, if that makes any difference. And that we put a correct name on them, but they're little bulbils, and they fall off the bulb, and you just can't get them all. And then they come up again, and they are a pain. The one thing that gets them, of course, is, and everybody'd say, well, they're okay. They kind of make a pretty thing, but then what happens? What happens? What happens, Sharon? In about May, though, what really happens to those plants? What happens to them? You remember?
They multiply. There are too many of them.
Well, no, they get that rust, and that rust comes all over them. And if you use them as a ground cover, they're completely covered in the rust, and they just look terrible. They look like they look sick, and the rust doesn't seem to stop them from spreading, but it stops them from looking pretty. And then you've got a yard full of rust.
Now mine don't get that.
Really? Boy, I bet
no, they, but there's bet, just too many of them. They take over.
Yeah, I bet they are prolific. I don't, you know, it's just, it's a tedious process. You got to get the roots, and you got to get them at the right time, obviously. I don't think it helps. Getting them at the right time means basically as soon as they begin emerging.
Okay.
The longer you wait, the worse it is. A good thick leaf mulch, I can tell you, a leaf mulch does suppress them, but it's got to be on thick, and it may suppress everything else. So live oak leaves built up about 6 to 12 inches can certainly help suppress them.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Yes, I didn't help as much as I want to. Yeah, one of those curses. Hey, we're going to be back.
Traveling through this world alone, there is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Muscadines. What a subject this morning. I should have studied up on muscadines if I had known it was going to be such a big subject. But it's interesting. So Greg has said something curious to me, and we just quoted Greg because Greg's got the pruning thing down. And we ought to talk more about muscadine pruning. It's an interesting thing, and how to have there is a way to have a semi arbor that is actually really productive for grapes, and muscadines, and we'll talk about that here in just a minute. It's a program developed by a guy in coastal Texas who's very famous. I think it's the Munson system. It's a modified Munson system, but it's who was famous for developing really great grapes, but we'll talk about how that works. But Greg said that he was having his muscadines were drying and shriveling up and looked like pepper in midsummer, but his Concords were doing well. Now, oh boy, this is embarrassing because I would have said, and I would have told Greg, if he had not told me this right off the bat, that it was the Concord grapes that were going to drop and look like little pieces of pepper by midsummer, and the muscadines would do just fine. So that's very interesting. What we've got on the muscadines is a fungus. I'm not sure why you're seeing it first on the muscadines and not yet on the Concords. I suspect, and there are several fungi, and maybe one type is affecting the muscadines and hasn't yet gotten to the Concords. How are you going to deal with that? One thing, you know, be sure to clean those beds out really good. Clean out all the old leaves. It may help after you've cleaned the old leaves out or after the leaves have completely fallen. It can sometimes help to mulch under those grapevines, Greg, and that keeps the fungal spores from spreading with rain and splashing upwards and other things. So after you've cleaned out, if you don't want to let the leaves of the grape fall into that leaf pile, but starting this time of year, you can put that mulch on, and that's great. I don't recommend mulches for things like citrus trees. We'll come back to that later. But for things like apples and muscadines and grapes and even figs and lots of other things, peaches, a mulch that's put on this time of year after all of the leaves have fallen can be a good thing. It has a lot of benefits because it keeps the soil from heating up too quickly, which you don't want in spring. You don't want them to germ. You don't want them to come out too quickly. It's good for blueberries too. It also buries in many cases, it will bury the old leaves and any the little fungal whatevers that are there in the leaves. Conidia, is that what you call them? That are in the leaves on the ground and also in the dirt. So you can bury that, and you can suppress sometimes just by that means, suppress the fungal turnover that gets into the plants, and that's good by not allowing it to actually see the light of day. You may have to do some spraying. I don't recommend spraying with anything too heavily, but maybe some copper sprays. But I need to figure out what exactly is going on with your muscadines there, Greg. Let's check them again this year, and let's see what's happening. Well, those are pretty things. And they're very pretty looking muscadines, and the Concords were pretty too. Dapple sunlight, does that make a difference? I don't know. I think it's got something to do with how the fungus spreads. Cade, let's Tara, hold on just a second, Tara, because I want to. While we're on muscadines, I better stick to muscadines for just a second. So, Cade, you got some questions,
sir,
about muscadines?
Good morning.
Too? Yeah, I'm listening.
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Yes, sir.
And tell you, I prune all my muscadines Christmas week. And the reason I do that is because we warm up here, even though it's 29 and blowing out here in the dead of summer. We warm up really quick here. And then muscadines, if you let them leaf out, you're not going to be able to see what you're trying to prune. You got to trace that vine all the way out and see. Kind of, it's like unraveling a whole bunch of knots in a string. You got to figure out which ones you want to cut out and keep and all that. But when they're naked like that, you can see what you're doing and, you know, kind of make it a little easier. But when they got any kind of leaves on them, you can forget it. Plus, them tendrils start growing and they start grabbing on, and you trying to pull on them, not going to happen.
And that's an important part. You do want to prune them in general before the leaves come out, because you can't see. And yeah. In this case, I told him, and here's let me be careful about the advice that I gave to this person who had the big muscadine problem.
Yeah.
If he's going to have to prune, it's a mess.
Prune half of it. When you got a mess like that, just say, yeah, look, I'm going to prune one or two big ones this year. And just cut out one or two big ones and start with that. And then next year, do another couple till you kind of get the wig, witch's hair, whatever you want to call it, the knots out of it. And then you'll be left with fewer to deal with, and those are probably be the ones you keep. But
so you can argue with this, and it's probably arguable, but I was going to say, if you let the, in a situation like that where you're going to be doing really heavy pruning, and inevitably he's going to be doing it, if you prune heavily, it's going to respond. It's going to want to respond. You're either going to prune it so heavily that it nearly kills it, or it's going to respond by putting on lots of new growth, and then you end up with lots more growth than you would otherwise. So
yeah,
in those cases,
younger growth is even though it'll put on a lot of tendrils and all that, it's not as woven into the existing skeleton, if you will, as the older ones are. And I've had that problem where I've helped people prune their muscadines. It was their granddad's, and, you know, then they got the property, and they didn't know what to do. And I said, well, you got to just take baby steps. I've heard a lot of people say baby steps. Well, start with that and prune one side. You don't want to butcher it, but a lot of people don't know the shape. Depends on, like you said, the trellis or arbor or whatever they're on, a single wire or a cable. And kind of you can get, luckily we got the internet, and you can look at different pictures and all on there. But essentially what you want is a long arm or a long vine, and down that vine you want about 3 feet off the ground cleared so you can see your feet and mulch it and all that. And then above that, every so often you want, like you said, them spurs that stick out about 4 to 6 inches, every so often up and down that vine. And that's where your fruit's going to come from. It's going to get shaggy through the year, but where those spurs are, just like on a pear or apple tree, that's where the fruit's going to be. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's and once you see it, it's really you really say, oh, yeah, I get it.
The, well, I got a guy down the street from me. He's an old guy. He's probably about going on 90 years old, and he's had muscadines growing on the top of his chain-link fence. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the world is he going to prune that? But he don't really prune it. He just kind of tips it off the ground, keeps it where it ain't touching down low, you know? And, man, that thing, he's probably got, all I know, the lots around here are 300 feet long. And they're deep. And he's got it all the way wrapped around the whole property. And utilizing what he has, you know? He didn't have to put up an existing framework. You know, it's already there. And they're loaded.
Yeah, that's
they're
cool.
loaded every year.
That's cool. Well, listen, Kate, thank you. And
hey,
we're going to be back.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate everything y'all do for Mobile and surrounding areas. And Happy New Year. And let's make this one better for sure. And I'm ready to get out here and get some work done.
All right. Hey, we're going to be back, folks. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Nino Levy taught me to weep and moan.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening, and let me do this in bluegrass time really fast. So a lot of questions. Everybody hold on just a second because I want to get to all of them. They're all really good. Somebody asked me about plumerias and how do I treat them between here and spring, and really good blooms last year. Let me tell you something about plumerias, and I think this is true for almost all plumerias, though there's a lot of different kinds, and some have more dormancy requirements than others. They seem to like a dormant period. Now, let me be clear. Dormancy is when we have dormancy in winter because of cold, we perceive because of cold temperatures, and that's right. It's mostly the leaves, the trees drop their leaves. Plumerias have dormancy because in the areas where they are, they go through a dry season, and they just lose their leaves during that dry season. And so it's true for a lot of things that bougainvilleas are the same way, really. Plumerias need a little bit of dormancy. They seem to benefit from dormancy, and that increases their bloom period. So a lot of people who are really good with plumerias say, don't keep your plumera blooming full steam. Growing full steam during the winter. Let it drop into a dormancy. It doesn't need a lot of light, doesn't really need any light, doesn't need any water, doesn't need any fertilizer for a few weeks. Just a few weeks. And it needs to, temperatures need to stay above freezing. Probably need to stay above 40, but below 60, so we don't want to flush it out. But we want it to kind of go into that sort of dormant state. And you could put it in a garage that doesn't get too cold. It would be one way to do it. And give it a few weeks until temperatures start climbing into the pretty consistently into the upper 60s, and then bring it back out, and it's going to put on leaves again, and it's going to bloom. That dormancy stimulates its tendency to bloom. And people who are really successful do it this way. So there you go. Got any questions about that? Give me a call. We'll try to talk it through a little bit better. a little bit better. And that's I'm not the world's bestest plumeria grower, but I have definitely seen that happen. So Bob, because we missed Bob early on, I want to get to Bob real quickly. Bob, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, thank you. You really do a nice job of educating folks like me, and I really appreciate the information you share with folks. Thank you.
Yeah. I wish I could do better on oxalis. It just, anyway, can you hear me okay, sir? There you go. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I can't.
I was given a lemon tree as a gift, a Meyer lemon tree, and my question is, should I plant it now and cover it up at night or wait till the spring?
Wait till the spring.
Okay.
That's easy. And it's not going to put on much root growth now. So put it in a, you know, put it in a garage. You can feel free to pull it out during the day if it's warm enough. But if we get, there's a good chance we'll have a really cold spell in late January. We often do. And it could do damage to a tree like that. So you definitely, in that case, and particularly because you've already had it for a while, it's probably been in a warm place, you really want to wait until March, late March, probably, before you plant it out.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thanks again for all the good information you give, sir. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for being patient. Tara, I'm so sorry that I missed you. Are you still there?
Yes, but you're very faint.
Oh dear!
I'm having
that
a hard time hearing you.
Yeah, guys, I'm okay. So
okay.
It may be partly just.
Well, yeah,
can you hear now?
I'm glad you're okay. You know, it's like, but
No,
it was faint as far as being able to hear you. I should say.
Yeah.
And now it's better. Okay, the oxalis thing, I'm sorry. I'm actually glad you kind of said that, because I disagree with you. I love oxalis. I love the little pink flowers. You know, they're just pretty. And the parts are start looking like, you know, really bad. I just rip them up and throw them off. It's like, and they dissolve, right? You know, they become once and future flowers, right?
That's right.
But I'd like to suggest something that is important. At least I think that you think it's important, as do I. The Mobile onions, for lack of a better term, right? The little wild onions that make little bulbils on the top. I went out and because I was, my truck was down, so I was walking to the grocery store, and there were a whole bunch of them on the boulevard. So I went ahead and pulled the little bulbils as I was walking by, you know, two or three times. This was before COVID was so bad. And I had taken them and thrown them just in a styrofoam coffee cup and successfully grown absolutely wonderful kind of Mobile chives, if you will.
And they're great. They're great. I have used them in spring greens all the time. They really are nice. They have a great flavor. I like them.
And beautiful color.
They,
and you know, it's like, again, if you've got just like a coffee cup full of tomato soup or potato soup or sweet potato soup or whatever. What you got? Mushroom soup. Yeah, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Just, you know, throw it. What is it? I don't want to quote anyone who's probably trademarked, you know, the word. But just, you know, just put a little bit of that on the top of it, sprinkle it over, and it just, I don't know, it's, you know, with or without butter or cream or whatever, it just makes it pop, right?
It's good. So there's two things that I'll tell folks. It's that wonderful smell that you know it's really spring, and it starts in February when people start mowing their yards.
Mowing, exactly. You know, let
and
it
it's
grow
that wonderful,
some. Let some of it grow
wonderful
some.
Smell of,
harvest these little
wonderful
things.
Smell of onions.
You can also put them in vinegar and make a wonderful vinegar with them.
Right. There are two things that look like onions that grow in people's yards, and I need to tell people this, Tara. One is the wild onion, and it's very easy to know it's the wild onion because it smells like onion. There's another green that grows with it, and it is just about as common and just about as prolific. And you will look at it and you'll think, oh, well, that's the wild onion too, except you'll pick it, and it has absolutely no fragrance, no flavor, no fragrance. It is false garlic. We'll call it a false garlic. We'll make up a name and give it to it.
Again, what garlic?
False garlic, F-A-L-S-E, false. As in not real, and it is not, has no fragrance, no flavor, and it's Nothoscordium. Did you want me to say that out loud?
I'd like you to say it again because I'm having trouble hearing you. I'm sorry.
Nothoscordium. But it's if it doesn't have any fragrance, it's not the wild onion. And you'll know that. And you'll see a lot of this growing out there, too, with the wild onions.
Well, that's why I suggest pulling the bulbils, if I got the right word. The little bulbs
in this case. Yeah, and that's right. But, yes, so just sniff. If it sniffs and it smells like onion, it is an onion. There it is. Let's keep it simple. Yeah, so good.
My question today is, yes. I was hoping that was a contribution because it has worked so wonderfully for me, because once you do have it, and you, again, I grew it in a styrofoam coffee cup.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's wonderful because you can snip it with scissors like chives and use it to make, I don't know, just, you know, make yourself happy, right? You got to do what
you can to make yourself
happy. Okay,
right,
but
my
question is regarding Merlaton. I have the person with the property who can do it, and fortunately it's a relative, so, you know, we've talked about it, and she's very interested in trying to do it. When do you start the Merlaton, i.e. David Hubbell's, you know, things that are going on? When do you start it, and when do you transplant it? This is a sandy soil property, higher elevation, but in the Dog River area. And
you'll be fine.
Was
so,
farmed by our grandfather.
Which included
chickens, you know, so it should be. And she's also had some Louisiana background, so she's a great cook, she's a good gardener, and we're very interested. How do we get in contact, and how do we find out? Botanical Gardens going to have it at the sale, or what?
I don't know that answer yet, but let's try to figure that out. Let me tell you a little bit about starting. And then I'll talk to David about whether he's got enough and how he would distribute it, and we'll see if there's the Botanical Gardens may be able to find some other plants as well. To start them, you can just basically start them now. You can put the Merlaton. This is not a bad time to do it. Just put it in a pot. You don't take the seed out. You leave the seed in the fruit. You just put the whole fruit, bury it about halfway in a pot, and let it germinate and come on out.
So it's pretty easy to do.
Practically speaking, it'll need to be a gallon pot.
Okie doke.
It could, if it's a little bigger, that's okay too. But it need to be about a gallon pot. And probably a full gallon rather than the small gallon that the nursery trade uses. So that's because it's a big fruit and you've got to have a mouth wide enough to accommodate it. Not your mouth particularly, but the
mouth. You meant that.
But the mouth, the mouth of the. All right. So there it is. Hey, Tara, good to talk to you. Good to hear from
Always
you.
Good to
Thanks
talk
for reminding
to
us
Thank
about
you
the
so
onions.
Much for all the help that you give us here.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Bye. Hey, Julie, I'm listening. What's up? Oops, Julie, we got a break. We're going to be back after the break.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
We still got a show?
The rain is falling through the mist of sorrow.
Well, I'm glad to hear that music, because we got to get we got a lot of questions to answer here. Tony, flash round. Tony and Fairhope. Plant your caladiums in later in March. No need to plant them now. The ground's too cold. They're not going to do anything. They may survive, but there's a chance that we could get a cold spell. They'd rot. Gladiolus, plant them right now. Be fine. No problem. Go ahead and plant your glads now. Hold on to your caladiums. There you go. Greg, what a beautiful picture you did. That is a beautiful picture of how to prune a muscadine. What a great way of doing it, you know? Draw it out for yourself, and then you really get a sense of what's going on. I think that's really nice. That's just a beautiful thing. We got to talk about David has always going to volunteer here to help us out with Melaton. We got to talk about how to do that in some ways, and I'm going to try to get David with the botanical gardens, and maybe we can make some reservations. We'll see. We're going to figure out how to do that. Nate on Dog River. Nate, you have got Kogon grass. And people, when I say it, when I say that you have Kogon grass, people are going to cringe. I can just see their shoulders just tightening up. And their faces are just going to be all wrinkled because I said the word Kogon grass. It's a mess. And we don't have time to talk about it. I wish it were easy. I wish bad things didn't happen, but you got a bad thing that's happening. It's happened to a lot of us, and it's Kogon grass. It's not easy to get rid of. We'll talk about it. Call me back next week. Let's talk a little bit about your Kogon grass, where it is, what you're going to do about it, and let's see how that works. Johnny, Johnny is such a great guy. I love this. And Johnny says nice things. Thanks, Johnny, for saying that. He's got a beautiful picture of his pansies, a beautiful picture of his cabbages. He knows how to grow things in winter. It's beautiful. They're covered in frost, and they're perfectly happy. This is the cool thing about gardening in winter, is seeing how beautiful. I mean, as beautiful as pansies are they not more pretty, Johnny, when they're covered in frost? And they don't care. They love it. They're doing just great. Johnny's got a great scuppernong trellis. It works, and it's fine. Let's see here. Who have we got? So we've got some callers. Julie, I'm listening. We don't have a lot of time, but let's try to get these questions in. Are you still there?
Mr. Finch, we're going to have to extend your show for another hour.
Oh, don't do that. I got gardening to do.
I know so, you do. I know. Well, I'll try my best to be short, sweet, and to the point.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
My question's right off, Pam. I have a miniature fig tree. I've had it for about 5 years. Every time I move, I transplant, take it with me, and it's doing great. But I'm fixing to have to transplant it again, bless its heart. But anyway, is there anything I need to do for it, to it, about it, to help the fruiting on it and the growth?
Well,
I know you said mulch them.
It's still in a container, right? Or is it in the ground?
No, it's in the ground.
No, mulching is the one thing you need to do. I don't recommend doing anything else except mulching. It probably, even in our sandy soils, it probably doesn't need fertilizer. You can put some cottonseed meal on it, but don't put too much, because all it'll do is put on lots of leaves. It really is not going to make it fruit a lot more. So just mulch it. Mulching is a big deal. Now make sure that mulch is out as far around that fig tree as you can get, at least out to the tips of the branches, and even farther if you can do that.
any particular kind of mulch? Could I use oak leaves or something like
that? Oak leaves are perfect. They're beautiful. They're
awesome,
wonderful.
Awesome. All right. My next question is...
Julie, can you save it for next week?
Oh,
call me back next week. Let's try it.
Real quick, just this.
All right.
I pulled up a oak plant, an oak tree.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
The root broke off. Do you think it'll live or no?
Probably not.
Okay. I went on and planted it. We'll see what happens.
And
I wanted to thank the people that helped the man, the vet, in the woods behind Arby's and Sims on Moffitt and Schillinger. There, I put out a Facebook plea for help, and kudos to all y'all who helped him. And right. One more thing, it's a song. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. Hang in there, Mr. Finch.
All right, Julie. Thank you. Bye. Well, John, help us out here. Let's. You still there? John in Grand Bay? Yep. Bill, I'm listening. What's up? Bill in Mobile.
Oh, hi, Bill. I'll be quick. I want to grow corn this summer. I grew up eating Jersey corn and Maryland silver corn, Jersey sweet, Maryland silver. I've been a little disappointed with the corn I've been getting in Alabama since I've been here. Am I missing the boat? What should I grow? And I guess, will that Jersey sweet or Maryland silver do well here? Or is it the climate or soil up there that makes it so good?
Well, I think you can grow your own corn and it'll be pretty good here. It needs lots of sunlight. I would get it started early. That's the big thing. Get it started. Even, you know, if you're in Mobile, you can, in particularly if you're in Midtown Mobile, you can even start your first seeds in that last week in February. Might as well. And you might end up with a lot better corn. And it'll be pretty good. There are a lot of varieties out there. A lot of people here love Silver Queen. It is not necessarily the best variety, but it's probably going to be very similar to Maryland Silver and what you're used to. And that might be a place to start, but there are a lot of varieties of corn that will do very well here. Just get them started early. The later you get them started, the more problems you're going to have. Sow a few seeds now and sow enough to get them pollinated. Call me back next week when we have more time to talk about this in detail. I am so sorry that we can't get to all of that today.
Quite right. Thank you.
Can you do that? All right.
I will. Yeah.
Bill, good to hear from you. Well, we don't have much time left at all. I don't know if I've gotten to everybody's questions. We've had to leave a few things hanging. Nate, please call me back about the Kogon grass next week. We're going to work on that and figure out what to do about it. It's been fun. Thank you for the great pictures. Johnny, good to hear from you. Greg, good to hear from you. We'll be back next week.
Chances are good. All the vegetable will respond to you.
Some people don't go for prunes. I don't know. I've always found.